You have ransomware as a service right now, so you don't even have to know what you're doing to be able to essentially cripple a company and hold their data for ransom.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sean Duby, Principal Technologist, Americas for Cerberus, and welcome to the HIP Podcast. We're at the HIP Conference in Charleston, South Carolina, at the Charleston Place Hotel. And today we're talking about data and data protection and the world of data protection and how it's evolved from the way things used to be when we just had to worry about tornadoes and floods and hurricanes. And now we have to think about actually even more about tornadoes and floods and hurricanes, but also about cyber attacks and ransomware attacks and data encryption and how to bring your company back, or more appropriately nowadays, how to keep your company resilient in the face of a cyber attack. How to keep the business running, even as you're fighting back against threat actors. My guest today is Andy Drag, a longtime product manager for Cohesity, where he has spent a lot of his career involved in protecting companies' data, teaching them how to appropriately keep their own resilience against such attacks, and what organizations do or don't think about when they are designing their backup strategies. So Andy, welcome first and foremost. And this is a...
Thank you. It's great to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
It's an area that, I know about peripherally. Everybody that's in IT is aware of, generally what they should do about backups and all that. But really when it comes down to the nitty gritty, it's the personal experience of having been involved in resurrecting data after an attack. That is what I think a lot of people lack. And one of the themes that I love to come about in this podcast is sharing the experiences of being on the front lines without having been on the front lines themselves. In other words, my supposition is that most people have not yet been through cyber attacks, but they're desperately concerned that when that time comes, will they be prepared for it?
Right. And generally, the answer is no, they're not going to be prepared for it.
Well, and that's what we're sort of trying to do, is to give as much information so that make it a little bit less painful.
Maybe.
So you spent the past several years working at improving data protection for mainly Microsoft workloads, right?
Yeah, mostly Microsoft workloads, whether it be in the cloud or on-prem. Traditionally, most of my time was spent on-prem, but as customers have started moving to the cloud, that's shifting. And I'm also in this new field, I'll call it, of identity resilience, that the backup vendors all want to play in at this point.
Right. Well, so you spent a lot of your career on data protection for Microsoft workloads. And historically, of course, it's been around disaster recovery. And as I was saying in my intro, that's changed. I mean, it's not that disaster recovery has gone away. Those, if anything, they're as relevant as they ever were. But now on top of that, we have cyber attacks to worry about. What has changed from in your experience in the industry for this?
Yeah, so there's been a big shift. Malware and ransomware have become more prevalent. There's anonymity to Bitcoin, which enables them to collect their ransom. And you have ransomware as a service right now, so you don't even have to know what you're doing to be able to essentially cripple a company and hold their data for ransom. As this becomes more and more prevalent, customers are getting attacked. The problem, though, is that they're not just going after their production data anymore. They've realized if there's a backup solution, if they don't go after the backup solution, they're likely not going to get their ransom. So the backup solution has become a target. So rather than thinking about your backup solution as an afterthought or a tertiary system, you need to think of it as a tier zero asset, just like you would with your identity system. Because unless you have good backups that you can recover from, you're done. You have no choice but to pay the ransom and hope for the best.
What are the some of the challenges that organizations face in recovering their data after an attack?
Yeah, so one of the big ones is ensuring that they can recover the data to a point prior to the attack. So all the backup vendors have been putting efforts into trying to leverage machine learning to figure out when the most recent backup that they can restore from that doesn't appear to be infected. They'd have to then restore that and ensure that that's a clean backup to recover from. You know, for some workloads, it doesn't matter as much. Say if you're going to restore like just a database, it's very rare that the database is going to be infected with malware. And if it is, you're just not going to be able to open that database. So it varies based on the workload.
What about Active Directory in that scenario?
No. Yeah. So Active Directory, this is a bit of a different thing, right? So in order to get into the systems to place that malware, there's likely been an account that's been compromised at some point. So if you were to, say, restore your Active Directory servers from a VM backup or something, you're likely going to recover the malware. If you haven't recovered the malware, you're likely going to recover Active Directory to a state that's been compromised to where you could just get reinfected again.
True enough. So what are you consider to be table stakes for a modern data protection solution compared to maybe 5 years ago or 10 years ago in light of what you have to protect against now?
Yeah. So anomaly detection is something that you're going to want to look for. The anomaly detection is going to essentially be scanning your backups to make sure that not too much has changed or has patterns that make it look like malware may have been in those backups. It's important to have that. You can't rely 100% on that, but that's a table stakes item that you need to have. Another one would be certificates. You want to make sure all the data in transit, all the communications between the backup system and the clients is all encrypted. So you want to have a backup solution that has certificates used to secure the communications. Those certificates are rotated on a regular basis, or even better, supports using customer managed certificates where you have complete control over that.
Where these backup solutions don't depend on any external service, such as Active Directory, for example.
Yeah, for the most part, they don't depend on Active Directory to be there. If some do, but if you're dependent on Active Directory to perform a recovery and you need to recover Active Directory, you're kind of in a hard spot.
Right. Look, what about what about permissions and separation of duties in a data protection system, and how that protects both you inside and outside?
Yeah, so you want to have accounts with the least amount of permissions needed to perform the function that they're going to do. So you need to, before you even deploy or put into production your backup system, you want to make sure that you have a clear understanding of what the different roles are in the system, who's going to be performing those roles, and ensure that that aligns with the expectations of what you're going to expect that person to do, right? So for example, you don't want to have an Oracle administrator being able to recover your Active Directory data or SharePoint data.
So what would you consider to be best practices for data protection? There's what I call eat your vegetable type stuff, which is the basics, and sometimes these have been forgotten. And maybe what are but even though the basic principles haven't changed, the implementation of them has changed as we have new solutions out there.
Yeah. So in the past, everybody used to use a 3-2-1 backup strategy. And for the 3-2-1 is you've got backup like on hard disk, backup on another server, say, and then a backup on tape, right? And over time, the tape has fallen off and customers have moved to, you've got, say, a cluster of backup servers, and that replicates to another cluster of backup servers. So that's your two. And then at some point, the vendors have added Cloud Archive.
Which offline, right.
Right, which is the one. So you've got your offline copy is the Cloud Archive, right? So you've got primary, secondary, and then the Cloud Archive. The problem with the Cloud Archive now is just like your on-prem data could be vulnerable to malware or ransomware, there's now ransomware targeting cloud storage. So that cloud storage could then become unusable. What vendors have now done is they've introduced virtual air gapping. So it's still cloud storage, but it's extrapolated away from the customer's tenant, the customer's control. It's not within what an account that they own. So there's some obfuscurity there. And if there was an attacker, say, going after company A, but backup vendor A has their archive or their air gap, they're not necessarily going to know how to get into there. It'd be highly unlikely.
Right. So it's not, as you say, it's highly unlikely because the odds of them actually having the credentials that they need to access the storage is probably far lower instead of using a physical separation.
Right. And generally the air gap solution is going to be some type of worm or virtual worm media. So it's write once, read many.
Right. Right. Well, I'm proud to say that I back up my photo archive from my NAS at home to a little USB drive, and then it goes in my safe deposit box. So,
oh, very good. See, I just use three different cloud vendors.
Right. Yeah. I live in Texas where there are tornadoes, so the idea of an offline storage is very relevant. So, for last question, what about? I always have to ask the AI question, right? I'm a little skeptical sometimes about asking the AI question, but I will ask it and say, so what about AI innovations in this? How has it changed data protection and data recovery?
Yeah, so that's interesting. There's a lot of potential use cases. One of them could be the anomaly detection, right? There could be use cases around backup scheduling, which is kind of not all that interesting. You could use AI as something to help you perform recoveries in the event of a disaster. But what I think is maybe right now the most attainable is that as a backup vendor, you have all of the company's data, right? And say if you want to perform analytics against a history of data across multiple data sources, what customers generally do is they build out some kind of data lake, whether it's Azure Data Lake or Snowflake or GreenPlum or what have you. But using the backup data as your data lake now, you're saving costs. That data is already there, most of the time not being used. And you can have train your AI model on the data that you have in backup. And get a picture of what's going on with the company and pull out really any analytics that you can possibly think of.
Right. So instead of building your own data lake with probably a subset of company data, because that's very expensive, you already have all that, by definition, all of the company data that's important.
Yeah.
Because it's backed up. And that's over there. And yeah, so you can, the idea, I don't know if there's anyone doing this yet, is the idea of being able to use AI to dig through all that data and come up with insights that you're looking for.
Yeah, it saves you time on administration, time on moving late data into the data lake, costs on maintaining that data lake and paying for the cloud services to host it.
Yeah.
And with the data lake, a lot of customers, once they have that set up, they want to protect that, right? So you've already protected all of their data, and then you want to protect the data lake. So you're
pretty expensive.
That can get very expensive. Yeah. So if you're using your backup as your data lake, you've solved some business problems and potentially some finance problems.
That qualifies as a blinding flash of the obvious. Wait a minute. You already have this data.
Yeah.
What's preventing you from accessing it now?
Exactly.
So, any final thoughts? Any final? So this is your soapbox to say, go forth and do X to our viewers.
Yeah. Well, don't forget the lessons of the past. Always make sure that you have more than one copy of your important data, preferably three, like has been standard. Ensure that you have security configured properly on the product that you're using. Ensure that the product you're using is both indelible and
immutable.
Immutable. Thank you.
I get the two confused. And so let me stop and ask you, what do you, because I'm not an expert at this, what is the difference between indelible and immutable?
Yeah, so an immutable backup means that you can't change it. Okay. So once that data's been written, it's going to be frozen in time as it was, right? Your ransomware is not going to be able to encrypt it. Someone's not going to be able to change any data in there. But immutable is not the same as indelible. So if indelible means you can delete it, indelible means you can't delete it. Yeah. So, even though something's immutable, you can still delete it.
Delete the entire backup, for example. You can expire the backup is what you're saying.
You can expire the backup. You can forcibly delete it. But if it's indelible, you've got locks in place that prevent that from happening.
Okay. And I interrupted your soapbox, but I don't know if you had any more or were you gonna...
No, I think we're good. 3-2-1 backups. Make sure that your security is configured properly. That's probably the most important. Use whatever tools that you can to perform forensics to ensure that security is in place. Treat your backups like tier zero assets.
And I just thought, well, because we talked about it earlier, actually practice recovering the darn stuff too.
Oh, yeah. Completely forgot to talk about that. Maybe we should.
Why don't we have that?
Yeah. So one of the most important things is testing your recoveries in a disaster. When you do a recovery, you don't want it to be the first time that you're performing that recovery. There's going to be a recovery time objective that your company has set. Ideally, that's based off of testing your recoveries because you don't want a recovery time objective that you're going to blow the SLA on because you've never performed this backup and it's physically impossible to do so in the time that is allotted. So if you've got... let's say 100 terabyte of data and your SLA is 2 hours. It's light. Good luck. Yeah, you're not going to move that much data over the network.
Yeah, don't pull an RTO number out of the air.
Yeah, and make sure that the data is recoverable. You're familiar with how to recover that data and any intricacies in getting services back up online after it's been recovered.
Great way to end it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate the time. And this is the HIP podcast presented by Semperis.
And thanks, Shaw. It's been great.